My next guest has been moving the masses with laughter for over a decade. But humor has been a part of her existence since our days in elementary school when she was the class cut-up. Well, over the years, she honed her comedic craft, and her life as a comedian has taken her on quite a ride. But in 2020, she had a near-death experience that changed her outlook on the world. Her survival story shocked the medical field and continues to inspire people everywhere. Through it all, she may not be the last comic standing, but she is here to tell her story. Coming up next on the 40 Plus Files, Chicago-based comedian, the one and only Marcy Deloney. Welcome to the show, Marcy. It's good to have you.
Well, thank you for having me. And Happy New Year Eve.
Yes, Happy New Year Eve. This is the last day of 2021. All I can say is we made it. What you want 2022 to do?
Well, you know, I would like for 2022 to come in and behave. You know, just don't start touching stuff. You know, kind of like your mama told you, you went to the grocery store, don't touch nothing. Oh, don't bother nothing. Just don't hold on to this cup. Oh, you better not ask for nothing. Don't you ask for nothing. Don't you touch nothing. And don't you look at nothing. Mm-hmm. You know, oh, yeah. Yeah. And that's what I want 2022 to do.
Absolutely.
Don't touch nothing.
Yes. The last Golden Girl standing, Betty White, passed away today. You know, I'm a huge Golden Girls fan. So,
yes. Those stories from St. Olaf.
Yes. Yes.
And back in St. Olaf. You just hear Dorothy Rose.
Yes. I love it. I'm a huge Golden Girls fan. Love it.
Yeah, trust me, the stock is going to go up, you know, and then she went on to become such a comedic icon, mm-hmm. you know, like years after the Golden Girls, you know, Lord, it's been good to her.
Yes. 99 years old. Most definitely. So speaking of comedic icon, I'm just so happy to have you on the show today. You've been doing your thing in the comedy world for a minute now. One of the first questions I always ask my guests is, how did you view aging or growing older when you were in your 20s?
I thought it would never happen, especially because I was married at the time and I was raising children. I remember, like, you know, crying to my mom or my mother-in-law, and she would say, baby, they're not going to always be little. I promise you. And I was like, I don't believe you. I just like believe that they were going to stay like, you know, 6'3" and 1", you know what I'm saying?
Wow.
You know, now I just remember just, you know, I never saw this, you know, mm-hmm. and I didn't get the memo about aches and pains. Nobody told me about that.
Yeah, that's one of those things. That's one of those things you got to live to see it to know.
And you know, because I'm at the point now where I'm like negotiating with my body now, kind of like you do with children. You know, I'm just, you know, waiting to go on stage and they're calling me, you know, oh, come to the stage. And I'm telling my knees, I'm like, listen, we're going to walk up here together. You're not going to stiffen up. Like a kid, you know, remember kids get stiff.
Yeah.
You're not going to stiffen up. You're going to walk in step with your brother over here. You know, we're not going to cramp up. Mm-hmm. We're going to walk to the stage. Please. And you know, it's like, and if you do, I promise I'll take these shoes off. As soon as I get off stage, I'll take the heels off. I'll take all this weight off of you. You know, so, I didn't get the memo.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, yeah. So I, like I said, it's something you have to live to see, to understand, because nobody tells us. It's just one of those things. Right.
But so, you know, I remember our parents doing that to us. Remember, mm-hmm. we would go outside without the jackets on. My mother would say, oh, they have a lot of cute people in Burr Oak. So you go ahead and not wear that jacket if you want to. A whole lot of cute people out there at the cemetery. They're cute as they want to be. You just go ahead and wear it. Oh, you don't have to wear any clothes. And I would think to myself, and she would say, oh, you're going to feel it when you get older.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm like, ain't nobody going to feel nothing. Mm. Girl, please.
Yeah, it's one of those things, definitely. So aging is a wonderful thing. I think it's, you know, everybody has different experiences. I always say that at 30, a light bulb comes on. At 40, there's this whole new illumination. You know, I think we're both 50 now. But
yes, we are. Mm-hmm.
Did you have any epiphanies after you turned 40? The show is called The 40 Plus Files.
You know, and I'll be very honest, and I think that there will be women that would agree with me. Even at 40, I didn't know who I was. I was still trying to figure things out, you know, when my friends were having, you know, at the height of their careers and, you know, doing things, you know, for me, I had a kid in college, one's about to graduate from high school and, you know, just freshly divorced. And I had nothing figured out. Hmm. You know, I just, you know, I hadn't figured anything out. Okay. You know, I was just out there, you know. Okay. You know, particularly because I got married so young, you know. So it's like, now it's time to grow up in a different way.
Yes, absolutely. Mm-hmm. I hear people who, you know, who married young, you dedicate your life, you know, to your children, actually. And then after they're grown up, that's when it's just first trying to figure it out. So I hear. I wouldn't know. I'm 50 with a 9-year-old, so.
Yeah, I get it. You know, I get it. You know, and it's like you just, you know, you try to, you know, find out who you are. And at the same time, you're letting your children go mm-hmm. out into the world. And it seems like now everybody's trying to figure themselves out. Mm-hmm. You know, okay. And that's what it was. That's what it was like for me.
Okay.
You know, I'm 50 and I'm just about to get it. You know, I'm this close to figuring it out.
Okay. Yeah. So, like I said earlier, you've been doing stand up now for a little over 10 years. Talk about your comedic gift origins, coming from a funny family.
Yes. My whole family was hilarious, you know, and it's just that I'm the only one that gets paid for it, I suppose. You know, but sometimes when you grow up, you know, I grew up in a blended family, you know what I mean? Where it was just like a blended and extended family, you know, it was like my grandmother, my uncles, my aunts, you know, and, you know, with my mom and, you know, my brothers and sisters and cousins and stuff like that. You know, we lived in one place, you know what I mean? And mm-hmm. there was the Drifters. That was the come get your life together house. Mm-hmm. So people come get their life together, you know what I'm saying? And they get on out of there, you know what I mean? So mm-hmm. it was pretty comedic, you know, growing up. You know, I, you know, for the most part, started off when we were in school. Mm-hmm. Yeah, speeches and things like that. And the teachers saw that I had a love for speeches. I had a love for talking, obviously, because I'm sure you remember.
Yes.
Most of you guys, not even, you know, when people say, well, I don't remember you, I just go stand in the corner. Like, remember now? So,
right.
You know, my name was Marcy Turn Around. Marcy Stop Talking. You know, that was my name in school, you know. So, you know, it started, you know, I'm glad for that energy that there were teachers who saw, you know, something, you know what mm-hmm. I mean? Because I would finish my work and harass everybody else. That was my goal. Finish work, mm-hmm. turn around, talk.
Yes. Because you're definitely a smart kid. I do remember that. You're very smart.
Thank you. You know, and you all were the goody-goody kids. Y'all were the goody-goody kids. We had the Jackies. We had the three Jackies.
Yes.
You know? Yeah. Jackie Harris, Jackie Robinson, Jackie Jennings, you know.
Yeah.
You know, we had three Jackies. Mm-hmm.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. So, yes. Wow. So you mentioned you got married at a young age. And you were raising three children.
Yeah. Yes. I grew up with my kids, practically.
Yeah.
You know, and no matter what, when you have children, no matter what age, you know, they don't come with instructions.
Not at all.
You know, they don't come with instructions. So, you know, it was, you know, if I could do it again, you know, I don't think I would have done half of the things, you know, but you can't undo it.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? You know, it was just, you know, it was back then. That's how it was. You know, you get knocked up, you get married. That's what you have to do. It's the right thing to do. You know, but I would never advise young women, young girls to do that. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't advise that. You know what I mean? Because it's so much to learn. It's so much that you miss out on.
Mm-hmm.
You understand what I'm saying? You know, now the advantage that we have are that these millennials, they're talking.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? They're talking. You know, they quick to express themselves.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't expressing yourself. You know, when we were growing up, you know. Well, right. You expressed yourself. It was just behind your mama's back.
Right.
You expressed yourself.
That's
you know?
Right. That's right. If you tried to express yourself, you know, too much, then you
know, exactly. You know, you would, you know, the only thing that would be expressed is the ambulance, you know, trying to hurry you to get you to the hospital before you clocked up out of here.
Right.
You know, it was you know, express yourself. It would be like, who are you talking to? You know,
yes.
And you know, they once you get, excuse me, who are you speaking to like that?
Yes, yes.
You know, we weren't allowed to do that. You know, and we couldn't be as open.
Mm-hmm.
You know, with our parents and things of that nature. So, yeah, it. You know, I basically grew up with my kids.
Okay. So let me ask you this: when did you know that you were funny? You know, because most people. Some people say, oh, I've always been funny or I've always been able to make people laugh. When did you know that you were funny?
I think, well, when I, that's interesting. I guess in talking to people, sometimes talking to people who were very reserved
mm-hmm.
and having conversations and they would just be laughing, you know, like, oh my God, you're funny. But it wasn't anything intentional. You know, it wasn't intentional. It wasn't like I had planned, you know, to say this or say that. It was just what would happen. And I think what really let me see early on that I, you know, that there was a gift there. Two incidents. I went a comedy show. Somebody signed me up for it was a comedy competition. I'd never been on stage and I, you know, and I'm at home practicing. I want to say this, you know what I mean? And I was just right because I'm really a writer more than anything.
Mm-hmm.
And I got there and it was like first place. You know, I had never, ever been, you know, in that capacity. Mm-hmm. And then from that particular run, there was a final show.
Mm-hmm.
And it was me and one pretty big name now in Hollywood. We were in this competition and I beat him out. You know, I was like second, you know, but these are people that were already established.
Oh, wow.
You know, so I was like, yeah, okay. And in 2005, that's when I kind of figured I had something there.
Okay.
There was a contest, a nationwide contest.
Okay.
And I remember, you know, going to the auditions and they told us, they said, well, you know, there's a light that they put on us to let you know when you get off stage, you know, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And they told us all women and they were like, listen, you watch that light, you know, if you watch that light and that light comes on and if you keep talking, we're going to turn the mic off, you know, mm-hmm. you know, because they were filming. They were from New York. They were in from New York. And they said, you know, you watch for that light. And I had practiced and practiced and I never got the light.
Hmm.
You know, kept going. I was able to finish my set. Then they talked to me. The producers talked to me after that show. Then they called me, you know, was trying to get more information from me because they really enjoyed the set.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that was my first clue that everybody doesn't get chosen. And I was just devastated, like, oh, I don't want to do this no more. This is, and you know, that was like my first audition. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, this is the way it goes. I don't know. I don't want to be bothered with that. But I remember the rejection voicemail. Mm-hmm. I just thought about it. They sent me a rejection voicemail and they were like, you know, we're real sorry, you know, but we just want to let you know, out of, you know, thousands of women, you know, you really should be proud of yourself. Mm-hmm. You know, I was like a finalist, you know, mm-hmm. and I just remember like, mm-hmm. I don't want to do it more, you know, and then I was raising the kids, mm-hmm. you know, so I really didn't pursue it, you know, too much, but I knew that I had something.
Okay. Yeah. You know?
Wasn't yeah. for sure exactly everything that I had, but I knew that I had something. It was yes. like the best rejection voicemail ever. You know, it was like really, really just rejection, you know, just mixed with a lot of love. You know what I mean?
Like, yeah. Like, if you're going to be rejected, that's how you definitely want to be rejected.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. So that's going to be a lesson to the brothers, you know, like, I don't want to call the police, Marcy, but Nate, I need you to go home. You know, something like that, you know. Right. But I love you, but you're crazy. You know?
Yes, yes. So you mentioned a big name in Hollywood. Can you disclose who that is, or you'll keep that under wraps?
Sure, sure. No. It was myself. It was this guy named Nathan Trenholm, and mm-hmm. the other person was Hannibal Buress. Okay. You know, and Hannibal, okay. you know, he's a really popular comic here in Chicago. You know, mm-hmm. he does a lot of videos, you know, and a real nice guy.
Okay.
And the funny thing about it is it was a show where they kind of low key depended on you, the comedian, to fill up the venue with your guests, you know.
Oh, okay.
They call them, you know, it's like they call them bring 'em shows. Mm-hmm. So it's like technically, if I brought in 40 people, that's 40 votes, mm-hmm. you know, just opposed to you bringing in 10 and somebody else bringing 10. And I had like, it was like three friends and he mm-hmm. had like his whole generation, like they were having a family reunion there. You know what I mean? And they called, it was like, oh, Marcy Delaney. I was like, what? It only had three people. And I said, well, that means his family voted for me. You know, but no, I don't know.
Right, I'll let him deal with that later.
I mean, but girl, they was popping it off up in there, you know. Okay. You know, but yeah, so, you know, that's when I also knew, but I hadn't really, you know, I wasn't really tuned in because I had, you know, I was still raising the kids, you know, mm-hmm. still raising the kids. You know, and then at the time, my ex-husband, well, he's my husband's time, he was like, well, you know, no, you know, you have to take care of the kids. You know, you can't do it. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Because they had gotten an offer from the club that they had the auditions at for the mm-hmm. women. Mm-hmm. And they were like, look, you know, would you like to be our house MC? And I'm like, oh, house MC? Mm-hmm. You know, but I got like a 12-year-old and a 10-year-old. You know what I mean? So I could.
Yeah. Yeah. So. In retrospect, do you think your husband, do you think that he would have supported you if he knew that, you know, this is definitely a gift and your calling, basically?
You know, I'm not sure. You know, and a lot of times, this is what I would advise, if I can say this, and to all the women who are listening, or you want to get married or whatever, that's why it's very important to have a life outside of your relationships.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Because at the time, my husband, he didn't have, you know, he had like his same little friends he hung out with, you know. Mm-hmm. Okay. And it was like, okay, he was always at home by dark. It was 7 o'clock, you know what I mean? Everybody could really cook dinner, you know, and things of that nature. And I'm like, it ain't my fault. You ain't got nothing to do. You know, but you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Get some friends. We get some friends that, you know, and do other things. But that's what happens, you know. And another thing about getting married so young and you're, you know, not having anyone to say, hey, listen, you need a life mm-hmm. outside of what you do. You know, you need that. And that's, yeah. you know, and that's something that I will never have the answer to mm-hmm. because. Even as the children got older, you know, whereas they could fend for themselves, you know, it was still an issue.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It was still an issue.
Yeah.
And at one point, you know, he gave me an ultimatum one day. He's like, you know what? like I was just ripping and running, you know what I mean? I would have shows and stuff, you know, mm-hmm. and he was just like, you know, you need to make a decision, you know, it's either going to be your family or comedy. And I figured my kid's going to love me forever. So, mm-hmm. you know, you know, so and that's what happened, you know, he's like, you know, you got to make a choice, you know?
Wow.
So, you know, pretty much, you know, and that's why it's very important. I would advise any young woman, even a young man or whatever, you know, either you have an understanding with the person, your significant other, or you make a decision if you want to be in that relationship or not. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Because, you know, you're going to always regret, you know, you're going to always, you know, you don't want regrets, rather. You right. know, you don't want regrets. To say, well, I wish I had, you know, I wish I had done this. I wish I hadn't done that. Yeah, so.
Absolutely. You know, people look back and say, you know, I wish I could have, coulda, woulda, shoulda, right?
Exactly.
Yeah, and you really touched on something that's extremely important. I think that everybody should have something of their own, because often that is the case. You have one spouse who, you know, who have put their all into the marriage and their relationship, and they don't have anything outside of the relationship, and that right. that can cause detriment. Do you think that issue led to your divorce?
You ultimately? Know, when I think about it, I never understood. You know, when I would hear people, our friends, our mutual friends, mm-hmm. that were getting divorced, and you say, well, why'd you guys, you know, split? And then they'd say stuff like, oh, well, we grew apart. Mm-hmm. You know, you would hear that, you know, and I would always think to myself, well, you know, well, how did that happen? You know, mm-hmm. how do you just not, you know, how did you just grow apart? But I think that at some point, everyone will face their fork in the road. You know what mm-hmm. I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, okay, especially when the children get older.
Right.
You know, it's like, okay, so what are we going to do now? You know, are we going to just stare at each other for the rest of our lives? And you know what I mean? Are you scared to move? He's scared to move. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. You miss out. You know, it's bad. I'm gonna say, it's one thing to get married young, and you know, it's one thing to get married young because you know you're gonna get older, mm-hmm. and then there's nothing else to talk about. Mm-hmm. You know, the kids are gone. You know, and you're just trying to figure out, you know, who is this person I'm married to? Mm-hmm. You know, so yeah, it.
Yeah, absolutely. How old were your kids when your divorce was final?
Let's see. My divorce was final. They were like 17 and like about 19 and 22.
Did they have anything to say? You know, kids can say, yeah, you know, good for her. You know, some kids are at that point. They're like, you know what? Hey, she has stuff to do. Good for her, or, you know, good for him, or, you know, whatever the situation is.
You know what? Looking back, mm-hmm. it was like, as the marriage began to deteriorate, my, you know, it was like the girls, I just remember them coming to me and they were crying. It was like, Ma, you know, you got to get out of this, you know? Mm-hmm. And I'm like, I know, because it was like, I knew that it wasn't the best example set. You know what I'm saying? Uh-huh. Uh-huh. It wasn't the best example set. And it just seems like tensions were getting higher and higher. You know what I mean? Uh-huh. It's only so much you can shield your children from. You know what I mean? And right. you think that you are, but, you know, they see everything. They see and stuff. I just remember, oh, absolutely. And I remember them coming to me like, Ma, you know what I mean? He said, why is Dad so angry? You know, mm-hmm. you know, why is he slamming stuff? And, you know, and then you're just like, you know, you're trying to, you know what I mean? You don't want to just completely, you know, just like annihilate the man in front of the kids, but,
right.
they had their own thoughts. Mm-hmm. And so I remember once we, you know, once, you know, we We had never separated before. We had never, you know, in all the years, it was, we were like really married. You know what mm-hmm. I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So I just remember, you know, when I finally had the courage and, you know, I pulled the trigger and, you know, he was gone and our oldest daughter came home for spring break and she just had a meltdown. Mm. She was crying. I said, what's wrong with you? She's like, you know, I just, she said, you know, I know that things were bad, but I miss my father. She said, Mom, I just miss my daddy. She cried. And girl, my heart went out. So I was like, well, baby, you can go where he is. So I'm like, you can go right over there. You know, I get it. I understand. You know, hey, I understand, sweetheart. Uh-huh. You know, you're more than welcome to. You know, you want to go visit him, go visit him. You know, uh-huh. You're not driving. You know, whatever. But I, you know, and then it wasn't till like a few years later, they told me, you know, she said, you know, Ma, that divorce really messed me up. And I really felt bad then. Uh-huh. You know, she said, that divorce messed me up, Mom. She said, I feel like, you know, I should have been able to talk to someone. But, you know, she never, you know what I mean? Because like I said, we were in every sense of the word traditionally married.
Right. Right. And that's, you know, all they knew.
Mom and daddy.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
You know, so that part I kind of, oh, you know, well, I'm sorry, but oh, well, mm-hmm. you know, but that was something there that I, you know, for the most part, I kind of felt bad. I kind of dropped the ball on that. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But what people didn't understand was that to me, it felt like I had to run for my life. Mm. That's what it felt like. And it was like, I didn't take the time to consider everything because I felt like if I did, someone was going to convince me not to do it. Mm. You know, it was like, if I sat down with his parents, mm-hmm. you know, they were going to, well, hey, you know, you can work out. You know what I mean? So I just kind of like, oh, we got to do it right now. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Because I did offer counseling. He said no. And I said, okay, fine. Mm-hmm. But then by the time he said, okay, well, we can get counseling. I was like, well, no, it's too late now. You know, door's closed.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's mm-hmm. what.
Wow. So sometimes you have to choose yourself, right?
Yeah, you know, you have to. Mm-hmm. You know, but the beauty in all of that is they have a great relationship with their father now.
Good.
You know what I'm saying? They have a wonderful relationship with their dad. And they're all adults. They can call them. They don't need me for anything, you know? Mm-hmm. You know, I'm not calling them saying, you know, I need school supplies. I'm not doing any of that.
Right.
You know what I mean? I'm not. So, mm-hmm. and that's the best thing, you know? You know, he and I were very cordial. We know we enjoy our grandchildren, mm-hmm. you know, we see them or whatever. But for the most part, yeah, I was dying. That's what it felt like.
Wow. Mm-hmm. So if there's someone who's going through that right now and, you know, they have their children to consider, because you hear a lot of people say, well, I'm staying for the kids or I'm going to wait till the kids get older. I know it's bad, but I'm staying for the kids. What do you think about that when women say that?
I don't recommend it, mm-hmm. but we know when women feel like that, for the most part, it's primarily financial. You know what I mean? You know, we can't do it by myself. You know, I just, you know, pray and, you know, and ask God for direction because mm-hmm. it's even worse for them to see you always angry. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? You always angry. You know, you're not kind to each other. You know, mm-hmm. how does that work? You know, my children, for the most part, my youngest daughter, she was like, well, amen. You know, and she told me, she was 17. She said, look, she said, you really do need to get a divorce, Mom. She said, because if you're not well, you know what I mean? She said, and how can you take care of us? Mm. She said, you know, if you're not taking care, if you're not happy, then nobody's going to be happy in here. She said, what, you know, me and Lex, what we're going to do, you know? And mm-hmm. she was 17 with a whole lot of sense.
Yeah, I was about to say 17. That's some insight for yeah, a 17-year-old.
She told me that.
Yeah, she gets it from her mama.
Wow. You know, she just had insight. You know, she said, hey, listen, you know, She told me, she said, you need to go ahead and get this divorce, mom. Yes.
Wow. So speaking of getting it from your mama, you had a turning point in your life when your own mom passed in 2002.
Mm-hmm.
So what happened? You kind of had stopped and you had a moment to just kind of reflect.
Well, you know what? My mother, she had like oral cancer. And at that point, you know, people weren't really, you know, the doctors told me, you know, the odds of it. And she had she had a great chance of surviving, but she would not be able to speak. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And you know, she really lost her will to live. She had one round of chemo and she didn't want to live like that. You know, mm-hmm. And she was young.
Mm-hmm.
She just turned 60.
Wow.
You know, and, you know, at that time I was like 29 years old and, mm-hmm. you know, trying to, you know, still raising my kids and stuff like that, you know, but, you know, it's like she literally waited for me to come to the hospital and I wasn't there 5 minutes before she kind of waved and that was it.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
So at that point, did you think about kind of honing your craft and pursuing stand up or is that something that came later?
That came like later that year.
Okay.
Like that fall. That's when I went to do that competition, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And you know, it was like I said, if you ask me, I know you can't get time back.
Mm-hmm.
But if I could go back, I would do a lot of things different.
Yeah.
You know, I would. Absolutely. But then again, I wouldn't have had the knowledge and the insight
mm-hmm.
that I have now. You know what yeah. I mean? I don't like the lessons. I'm not crazy about the life lessons.
Mm-hmm.
But nevertheless, I've had them.
Yeah. Yeah. And we have, and each one of those lessons actually help propel us to where we're supposed to be. So you actually auditioned for a competition. It was called The Funniest Mom in America for Nick at Night, right?
Yeah. That was that competition, you know, and it seemed so easy because I had children. I had the husband, mm-hmm. you know, at the time and trying to raise them. And, you know, and one thing about me, I can always find something funny. I can always find something out of like the worst situations, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so I got up there and I told about my life,
mm-hmm.
you know what I mean? It was like 9 minutes about my life, you know, and the judges, they loved it, you know, mm-hmm. because this is what happens.
Yes. Yeah. I'm telling you. Yeah. Well, you know, being a mom, it has its moments. A lot of those moments.
Yes, it does.
Yeah.
You know, but yeah. You know, they get older, they want to sash you out. You know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Interesting stage. My daughter is 9 and a half, but because she's so advanced, someone who specializes in children who are advanced like that told us that she's actually going through teen years now at 9 and a half. So I was like, oh, I'm not ready, but I can definitely tell. I'm like, she's not supposed to be doing this stuff at 9. And that's when a person explained to me that, you know, she is, you know, really like 13, 14 years old mentally. So I was like, okay, that makes sense.
Wow. You know, and you're just thinking like, I was not that smart at 9.
Yeah, tell me about it. Exactly.
You know, it's like, where'd you get that from?
Right. So, yeah. So you are, you know, a bona fide comedian who's just, you've been doing your thing. You're extremely funny. And your comedy is what most people would deem clean comedy, right? You don't use an impropriety in your comedy. Was that a conscious decision on your part?
You know, I just think it's something that worked. You know what I mean? Because, you know, at the time, you know, I had the kids, I was raising them, you know, up and in church and stuff. And, you know, the only person that cursed was the daddy,
mm-hmm.
you know. So I just, You know, I don't know if I just felt like I get cussed out enough at home. I'm not going to do it outside. I don't know. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I just, it just happened to work. Hmm. You know what I mean? Because there are comedians, Christian comics, and, mm-hmm. you know, they're Christians, but they still, you know, use colorful language, you know, right. and they say, you know, language just a way to, you know, that's just the way, that's the linguistics of, you know, this is how we express ourselves, you mm-hmm. know. And I just, you know, I've never felt comfortable. And if you can draw your audience in and your audience is just laughing, you know, and the funny thing is people say, well, you know, I didn't hear any profanity. You know what? You know, you didn't even say not one curse word. You know, I was waiting for you and I did. And I just, you know, God, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. You know, but that question is so controversial because then other people feel like, oh, so you're saying that, you know, people who do use profanity, mm-hmm. you know, there's no judgment here. Mm-hmm. That's fine. Mm-hmm. That works for you. And that's fine. You know, that's okay. You know, if that's what works for you.
Absolutely.
You know, that's fine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. To each his own. Have you ever been told that mm-hmm. that might hinder you at some point?
You know what? I had one person who tried his best to convince me. He's like, you know, Marcy, just, you know, it could just like really, really be funny. Hmm. And I'm like, I thought about it, but I was like, no, that's okay. You know, mm-hmm. I don't know if I thought like my tongue was going to like fall out on the stage and, you know, and burst into flames. Mm-hmm. You know, if I did, I just, you know, if I didn't have to, mm-hmm. then why would I start? You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It was like once, you know, like with my mom, mm-hmm. you know what I mean? Like if I do an impression of my mother, mm-hmm. you know what I mean? I have like a whole set dedicated. She's almost hilarious, mm-hmm. but she had like a filthy mouth.
Okay.
I'm not sure if I'm quite ready to chisel. Right. You know, unleashing like that, you know, I would have to get my disclaimer when I get on there. You know, the thoughts and views are not necessarily on God, you know, or, you know, Jesus Christ, the angels, you know, that they are not, you know, consenting to this, you know, but these are jokes. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Do not DM me, do not email in my church, mm-hmm. you know, all this stuff like that, you know. So I'm not sure. Yeah. I'm not sure, you know, if I'm really ready to.
No, I mean, but you're funny. I mean, you are hilarious. And I think, you know, just as an artist, you know, and a writer, a fellow writer, I think it really takes, you know, true gifts to be able to get on stage and just make people laugh without having to use profanity. And just like you said, there's nothing necessarily wrong with comedians who choose to go that route or writers who choose to go that route. But I just mm-hmm. think that there's something magical about people who can just stand up there and just go for it without using one one curse word. That's amazing.
You know, there's an episode on SpongeBob SquarePants where SpongeBob, you know, when the kids were, I used to watch television with him, he sees this profanity and he's just like, oh my God, you know, and that's what I'd be thinking, like, you know, if I'm going to be like SpongeBob, because he's like, oh, these sentence enhancers, you know, and he's telling Patrick, he's like, you know, my tongue feels all tingly. You know what I'm saying? Like, and I'm like, wow, you know what I'm saying? So I'm kind of scared. Like, you know, what if I get like SpongeBob, you know, just, whew. You know, I don't know. I'm excited to think about it, girl. That was like the funniest episode ever. You know, like I said, maybe if I was like imitating my mom or something like that, then I would really kind of still feel uncomfortable. Like, mm-hmm. okay, who's in the audience, you know, mm-hmm. you know, who's going to go back and tell, oh, you know, oh, Marcy Lamy was, you know, telling dirty jokes or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, so. Wow. So you said, a guy once told you, kind of talked to you about that particular issue.
Yeah, he just do it. Come on. Like, you're that influence, you know, That's made me marketable. Mm-hmm. I do, you know, women's events, churches, mm-hmm. you know, and things of that nature, you know. So some people are, they can turn it on and turn it off. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know, they turn it on, they can do church, but most of my material, I'm able to do multiple, you know, different audiences, and I don't necessarily have to change my material.
Good. I would definitely say that's an advantage. So as far as the industry is concerned, I know you talked about this before, but it's sort of a male dominated industry, you know, as far as comedy is concerned.
Yes.
Do you run into any problems because of that?
Well, you know what? I think that everyone says this is a boy's, you know, it's a man's world. Mm-hmm. And let me explain this to you. A lot of times when you see women comedians that are very vulgar, mm-hmm. a lot of time they're just trying to compete. You know, because I mean, come on. If a brother gets out there and he says all different types of things, mm-hmm. then he's funny. Mm-hmm. We do it, then we're vulgar. Oh, she has a filthy mouth. Oh, you know, it's filthy, you know. But there's a double standard there. Hmm. You know what I mean? You know, we're not supposed to, you know, speak like them and mm-hmm. say the different things they say, mm-hmm. but it really is it's a man's world when it comes to stand-up comedy, to me.
Hmm. Yeah, yes. Well, you would definitely know. Okay. So we were talking at the beginning of the show about 2020 and, you know, this year we're still in the, and I always say in the midst of the pandemic, because at this point, we really don't see an end in sight. So
I mean, it's like rollover minutes, you know what I mean? It's like we still rolling over 2020, you know what I mean? It's like we have not used up all of our pandemic minutes, you know. We just have like a whole boatload of pandemic minutes, you know. Mm-hmm. Left.
Yes, so you've been doing comedy, but you actually made the news when you were released from the hospital after your bout with COVID.
Yes, 2020, I had contracted the COVID-19 virus back in before it, when it was just a joke, when people mm-hmm. didn't know what it was. Mm-hmm. You know, they called it the Rona, you know what I mean? And, mm-hmm. you know, Corona compared it to beer, you know what I mean? And, mm-hmm. you know, nobody really knew what it was. But for me, it was something that actually changed my life. Mm-hmm. I'm an asthmatic. Okay. And, you know, my asthma was very controlled. It was very controlled. And I started feeling bad. You know, like I had a big, you know, me and Damon Williams, mm-hmm. Me and Damon Williams, we did a big show in March. It was like the first weekend in March. It was like the March the 7th and the 8th, or it was mm-hmm. the 6th or the 7th, one of those. Mm-hmm. And it was a lot of people, you know, it was just like two of us had a host. And this particular night, it was super packed, you know. And I remember just having that show. And then like the week before that, I had a huge show out in Michigan City, mm-hmm. you know. So I was fine, you know, and everything. And after that, between those two shows, I started feeling bad, you know. And so I said, well, you know, I never really had huge bouts with asthma. Mm-hmm. I had to get rescue inhalers, you know, so for the most part, everything was good, mm-hmm. you know. So I started coughing a little bit, you know. I was like, you know, so I went to urgent care and they gave me medication. And usually once I get the prednisone in my system, mm-hmm. I'm better. Mm-hmm. And for some reason, I told the doctor, I said, no, this is like the absolute worst asthma attack I've had in my life. Not going anywhere. Mm-hmm. So then I went back to urgent care, and then it was more prednisone, more rescue inhalers, mm. you know. Then I went to work and I was sick and I left, and then I went back to work the next day and I was seemingly okay. And my coworker, his name's Kenny Brown, mm-hmm. he said, hey, Marcy, you don't look good. You don't look so good. You know, I'm fine. He was like, I think you should go to the emergency room. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, well, I've been there like before, just the mm-hmm. other day. So, you know, I asked the supervisor, I said, well, you know, can I go? You know what I mean? And so when I went, they sent me home. And okay, fine. And our classmate, Angie Thompson, she turned 50 that year. And she's like, you know, she has a huge party. And so she, you know, she's like, well, come, you know, come to my party, whatever. And I was like, okay, I'm gonna go. And I had a gig in Bronzeville. And my mother-in-law, that's how I call her, my mom. Mom, she called me and she's like, what are you doing? I said, well, you know, I'm resting right now. I have a gig tonight. And she says, you have a gig? Said, yeah, she goes, daughter, I don't think you should go. And I said, no, I'm fine. She said, and then she just got quiet. And she said to me, she said, and she's an evangelist, you know. She said, daughter, trust God. Don't go. So I said to myself, okay. I said, she didn't say don't go to the party. So I woke up and I couldn't move. I was fine. I had gone to the store, had gotten Lysol because they were trying to get Lysol and stuff. And I got ready to put on my clothes to go to the party. And I couldn't put clothes on. I was extremely fatigued. I was fatigued. And I didn't know, you know, and then I, you know, I told my friend, I said, well, I'm looking at it on Facebook and it's like 60, 70 people jammed in one spot. But it wasn't until later on, I just realized that I could have killed a lot of people, or at least infected people. And that's one of the wonderful things about God, you know?
Yeah.
And I'm glad that I listened. And maybe I wasn't going to listen. That's why I couldn't put my clothes on.
Right.
You know, I don't know. But that didn't come until later on, that revelation, to after I got from the hospital. But long story short, I went into the hospital at Mercy Room the second time. They said, we're just going to keep her. They got sick of looking at me. So they said, we're going to keep her. You know, and I was just coughing and it was very painful. And next thing I know, they come and get me after 2 days. And they tell me, they said, you know, you have contracted the coronavirus and you're very sick. And you know, it was surreal because this is not something that we know about.
Right.
And the only thing I said, and I just remember, and I do get a little emotional about it. I said to the doctor, I said, am I going to die? And he looks at me and he's like, look, I'm not going to be an issue. He said, more than likely you may pass. Because you're very sick. And at that point, the virus had made its way through my entire body and I had pneumonia. So this is how my life is going to end. You know, I'm going to die from a virus that nobody has any idea about. And he says to me, he says, you got family? I said, yeah, I have 3 children. He said, well, you think you need to call them? So I had just under 3 minutes to say goodbye to my children. And I was only able to talk to my oldest daughter, Alexa. And, you know, so, you know, they were like, well, let me talk to your daughter. And they were very, they were blunt with me, but they were very kind to her. We're going to do everything that we can. I'm like, you didn't say that to me.
Right.
You basically let me know, you know, that I was going to kick the bucket in just a short time.
Yeah.
You know? And so I remember they said, we're going to put you down on a ventilator. It's going to, we got to clear that out. And they told my daughter, they said, well, your mom's relatively young. You know, we're going to do the best we can. And I just remember telling her I love her. She was just crushed. Like, mommy, I love you. You know, and so my mother-in-law, the evangelist, she, my mom, she, the last thing I saw was a prayer, a warfare prayer. She's like, this is for you. And I'm reading this prayer. That's the last thing I saw, because at that point I was getting to cough up blood. And the nurse, the male nurse, he said, you know what, let me hurry up and get you sedated. And I'm in ICU and I'm looking at them scrub up, getting ready to put me under for what would be the last thing that I've seen for my remaining, the remaining days of my life. And I was in that hospital 52 days.
Wow.
On that ventilator for about 3 weeks. And my daughter says on March 25th, 2020, they got the phone call that I would be dead in overnight because the virus had made its way so much so in my body that it was causing my vital organs to shut down. And how horrible that must have been for them. And God was not trying to have that happen to me. I finally, I guess they weaned me off, but I had I lost my ability to walk. My lungs were damaged, extremely damaged. And when I woke up, the world had changed.
Wow.
You guys were wearing masks. You know, I didn't know what was happening to me. And the doctors told me that for the first week, they were concerned because they had to teach me my name. I didn't know anything. I didn't know my name. You know, I didn't know my name. I didn't know where I was, you know, and they just kept telling me, you know, well, you're in a hospital, you know, that you were very sick, you know, and they sort of, they taught me my name, you know, and things like that. And as my memory came back, you know, but, you know, it was a very long, grueling battle, learning to work. And I consequently, I lost my job, you know, but God has remained faithful.
Absolutely. You know,
God had remained faithful, you know, and I know it's old, but, you know, I just, because I was having such difficulties in rehab, you know, and everybody was frustrated because we just didn't know what was going on. And the doctor, I just remember praying and I told God, I said, you know, I would love to say that I don't want to fight anymore. I said, I don't want to be kind of fight. I said, Lord, if you want me to fight, okay. And the next day, some great miracle, I wake up and there's a man standing in my room. And he's like, do you remember me? And I'm like, you're wrapped up. No, I do not. You know, head to toe, you know, who are you? And he told me, he said, you know, I'm Dr. Sundaram. I'm the doctor. I took care of you. I watched over you while you were on the ventilator, he said. And I hear that you have problems. And I just came. I had to come and see about you. And he explained to me about scar tissue and things of that nature. I would, at worst, be on oxygen for a very long time. Had to learn to walk. And, you know, it was a lot, you know. I was on oxygen probably for about June, July, like 2.5 months, you know, and through God's grace and physical therapy and, you know, speech therapy, because I had like a terrible stammer, a stutter, you know, but, you know, through God's grace and my dad, my mom lost my daddy, you know, we were all in the hospital at the same time. And he didn't make it out. And he was the healthiest.
Wow.
You know, so it was bad. I couldn't attend the services or anything because I was just woken up and was trying to, you know. So, you know, that's why it's important to me to find my path. Right. You know, because that's time that I can't get back, even if I wanted it.
Yeah. During that time, you were in the hospital for a total of 52 days now, and you woke up and there was, we were definitely in the middle of a full blown pandemic at that point.
Yes.
Were your kids allowed to see you or just from behind the glass?
They, you know what? They weren't letting anybody in. But I remember when I got moved to rehab, you know, and then the beautiful thing is like at this particular time, I was one of the, they told me I was one of the very first people who survived the whole cycle, emergency room, through the ventilator, you know, through rehab.
Mm-hmm.
One of the first people that survived going through that particular cycle. And once they put me in a room, because they opened up a rehab center,
mm-hmm.
too. And my daughter, she came to the window. And she was standing there waving. She was just crying. Like, "Mommy, hey, Mom, you know." Mm-hmm. And at that point, I knew who she was.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I knew who she was. You know, so, you know, it has been rough. Mm-hmm. Even now, the long haulers that they call us.
Mm-hmm.
Diabetes now, I've never been sick. They mm-hmm. traced it back to the virus attacking all your vitals, like they told me, you know, your mm-hmm. organs, and, you know, attacked my kidneys. And they didn't think, they thought I was going to need dialysis, but mm-hmm. no, God is good. Mm-hmm. You know, so I'm dealing with diabetes and I'm dealing with high blood pressure. I've never been sick before,
mm-hmm.
you know, but this is just, you know, and when I talked to my pulmonologist, you know, because I caught pneumonia
mm-hmm.
This past summer. And he said to me, he said, you know, I looked at your film. He said, and I'm very surprised that your lungs look as well as they do, considering the condition they were in mm-hmm. while you were for your life.
Wow.
Yeah.
So you said the last thing you saw was a warfare prayer that your mother-in-law had texted to you. Do you remember any words from that warfare prayer? If you were to just, you know, blurt out 2, 3, 4, 5 words.
You know, it was like, you know, it's like the Father God in the name of Jesus, you know, and we come against the spirit of infirmity, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
We come against the infirmity, you know, that, you know, take your hands, you know, off of my daughter,
mm-hmm.
you know, in the name of Jesus, you cannot have her. I think I still have it.
Mm-hmm.
But I just remember that was the last thing I saw.
Mm.
Because it was very difficult to talk without coughing and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And that prayer, I remember having it in my hand as I was watching them scrub. And I had like 12 to 9% on my phone. And that was the last thing that I saw.
Wow. That is definitely powerful. So you obviously came through that. You were on oxygen for a couple of months. And
yeah.
It's been sort of an uphill battle, but you are here. You are here. So let me ask you this. So obviously you've made your way back to the stage after coming through that illness.
Yeah. Yes.
Okay. What was it like, you know, your first time on stage after all of that?
You know, one thing that you worried about, even though the doctors were, they were telling me, like, you have to live, you know, just live. You know, I didn't want thinking that I was diseased, you know what I mean? Even though, you know, that I was cured, you know, I was still a little wobbly, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And, you know, it was like a show. It was an outside show.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it was like Lake. Mm-hmm. This Lake did the show and, you know, it felt good. It did. It felt good, you know, but there were a couple of moments, you know what I mean? You know, just you're nervous,
mm-hmm.
you know, but, you know, it's kind of like second nature to me,
mm-hmm.
you know, it's second nature to me, you know, and I had such great support. I had a promoter. I've done comedy from, he got me started. Actually, he took a chance on a clean green comic. I didn't know anything. And
mm-hmm.
Michael Kendo, he, you know, made sure that I had the things that I needed.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Marsh, you need anything, you know? And that's what we should do. We should take care of one another. You know what I mean? It's like,
absolutely,
because you're a comedian, you have a whole different set of crazy family members.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for the most part, it's like all these crazy family members, you know, that you have. But, you know, it was just from love, you know, from him and a few other comics.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people, they were like, you know, they were calling me through Facebook, like, I don't care what you look like. I don't care if you can't talk. I just want to see that you're alive. You know
mm-hmm.
what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
You know, so yes.
Yeah. Wow. So would you say you're kind of back in full swing when it comes to your comedy sets and everything?
Well, you know, it's the drive is here. Mm-hmm. I've never felt so driven, the drive is here. I like to think that I was back in the swing of things, I have some gigs coming up next year, but it's like this with 2020 knocked us out so badly. We don't speak about anything. We just wait till the moment gets there. Mm-hmm. It's like, I want to post it sad. Mm-hmm. And it's like Valentine's Day weekend. I'm like, I don't think I'm going to do that. I'm just going to wait and see.
Right.
Right. What I mean? Because with this virus and this variant, people mm-hmm. like tonight, there were several shows canceled.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Several shows were canceled because of it,
Yeah.
So it definitely had an effect, and I think about my friends. See, I was one of the comedians. I wasn't stepping out on faith. I was like, I need a job. And I was working and doing comedy. You know what I'm saying? I'm like, I am not there yet. I am not there. And a lot of my friends, they suffered, it kind of hit them pretty hard, mm-hmm. That was their sole source of income,
right.
Especially the ones that traveled.
Mm-hmm.
And did cruise ships and stuff like that.
Yes. Yes.
They took a big hit. And now they're out there again, just trying to make a living, mm-hmm. And stay well.
Wow. So it's so you turn 50 this year, and it's such a blessing, right? Did it hit different? did this birthday hit different?
The funny thing about it is like some of the questions that people ask me is like, when you get out of the coma, what did you want to do? Did you just want to? Oh, I was like, I'm trying to keep from peeing on myself. That was my baby. Yeah. What were your goals? Not to like piss on myself and, invite people, because everything has to get back together. That was big for me, if I could remain dry, what I'm saying, and walk, I'll take that. In all honesty, a lot of people want to know, what happened. I didn't get, this big epiphany, when I came out of the coma, I don't remember necessarily having a conversation with the Lord. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
I would have dreams, but they were mixed with whatever was going on. And I'm kind of guessing that these probably were the dreams of, being where I was. I think I was kind of like maybe coming out,
mm-hmm.
because they said that they had to wean me off of the, off the medication and stuff right. like that,
mm-hmm.
From the ventilator and stuff. I didn't have, it was like, this part is really funny because I had to wear this device around my neck, mm-hmm. so I could check my oxygen levels because I couldn't walk from here to there. Mm-hmm. I feel like I was going to pass out. Mm-hmm. So the oxygen had to be 90 and above, 90 and above, that's what they were looking for. You got to mm-hmm. have 90 and above. And I remember one night, because when I was in the hospital, it was like 70, 80. And that's when everybody just started flipping out. Like they couldn't figure out what is, what's going on. So mm-hmm. I get home and I'm wearing this device around my neck. And so when I would go to the bathroom, anything, I'm supposed to put my finger in there. And it's supposed to take my pulse and mm-hmm. my oxygen. And it was in the middle of the night. And I'm laying there. I come back from the bathroom. I'm just kind of huffing and puffing. And I look up and I put my finger in. And it set like 39.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like screaming like a fool.
Mm-hmm.
It was 93. It was upside down. And I'm just like, oh my God, I'm really flipping out. You know what I mean? And it's like, oh, turn it up, turn it around. If it was 39, you would like be right. So, but it was 93. And I just remember just like flipping out, like, remember that, I'm like, Marcy, come on, fool, turn it up. You got it wrong. It's 93. It's not 39. It was a lot. It was a lot. I refused to use my walker, you know. Mm-hmm. I was like, I'm not getting on it, you know, but, mm-hmm. you know, God is good.
Yeah.
You know, so now I can sit back and I can see the humor in it all now. Mm-hmm. But there are moments that my doctor suggested that I may need to speak some type of therapy mm-hmm. because of the trauma, mm-hmm. you know, that I experienced. I did. It was a lot.
It sounds like a lot. But you are just obviously God is just not through with you. So you.
And that's the scary part. You know what I mean? It's like, so you're not going to be through with me if I walk up and down these stairs fast, are you, Lord? You're not going to be through with me, you know.
Wow.
Yeah.
So you've been doing comedy for quite a while. What are some of the biggest advantages of doing it now at this age? And what are some challenges?
You know, I think the advantage is that you don't have to, you can just be you. You know, there's no, I mean, you know, heck, for the most of us, you know what I mean? We just be glad to wake up in the morning, mm-hmm. the 50s and the older, you know what I mean? It's like mm-hmm. you can, I think the beautiful thing is the audiences being able to convey messages that we all understand, to be able to talk about things that we all understand, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. You know, as far as health and, you know, and adult kids and things of that nature, you know, mm-hmm. it's like, for the most part, you don't have anything to prove to anyone. You know, mm-hmm. you're just grateful.
Yes.
You know, disadvantages, you know, I never thought I would say this. Mm-hmm. I never thought that I would say the young people, you know what I mean? These young folks, you know, like my parents used to say, oh, you know, those young folks, mm-hmm. but I don't know if it's any disadvantages, you know. Well, yeah, I'll tell you this. I'm sure you all know on social media, you see a lot of, we call them internet comics. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? You know, so it's the disadvantage to me is you always have to try, which I don't, to make yourself more relevant than the next person. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? On social media, you know, it's about the disadvantages is it's about followers. Mm-hmm. It's not necessarily about who's funny. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. You know, because Chicago, we have great comedians. Mm-hmm. You know, we have a lot of talent that come up out of here. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And you can take the funniest person and they may not have 10,000 followers or mm-hmm. whatever. You know what I mean? And the chances are they're going to pick the person who's able to fill seats because they're so popular. But they may give you a subpar show. You know right. what I mean? So
yeah.
Do you want people to laugh? Do you want 100 people to laugh or you want 1,000 people to laugh? You know what I mean? 1,000 people fill up the seats. You see what I'm saying? So mm-hmm. that's definitely a disadvantage to me. You know what I mean? It's not like the old school way when people came out to see you, mm-hmm. you know, they liked you, you know, you became popular, but for the most part, you know, social media is choosing things, you know, and then what happens is you bring these people into the stage and then you realize that they need to get back on Instagram mm-hmm. or wherever, you know, you saw them at because they're not as funny or, you know, it's not what you thought it would be like seeing them in person mm-hmm. versus skit.
Yeah.
I mean, you can do it all you want and be hilarious, but you get on that stage, baby. Mm-hmm. That's where the rubber meets the road, you know. And yeah. you know, Black folks, we are really hard.
Yeah.
You know, we ain't laughing. You can set yourself on fire. And we just like, who else they got playing here? Because we ain't. You know, we are a tough crowd.
Yeah.
We're a tough crowd.
Yeah, that's true.
And we will let you know. Hey, man, you ain't funny. you know, yeah. Waitress, you know, I need a drink to get through this. You know what I'm saying?
Do you have a process for writing jokes or preparing for a set?
You know, what's funny is I write, you know, and I've been blessed to write for a couple of comics, too. Mm-hmm. And I think one of the advantages is there's always something going on, you know, and, you know, I'll write and to be honest with you, half the stuff I write, I don't use, mm-hmm. you know, but for me, it's psychoschematic because I'll write out a set and I'll fold it up mm-hmm. and I'll put it in my pocket. Like, okay, I got it right here, you know, and mm-hmm. you go out and you do the best you can, you know, you do those jokes that's going to work, mm-hmm. you know, because there's some jokes people are just going to laugh. No matter what, they are going to laugh. You know, I mean, those are your staple jokes, you know. You know, and yeah, you know, sometimes we get out there and we're like, ooh, I should have gone mm-hmm. back over this joke or whatever, you know, like that. But the process is, you know, we just, you know, every good comedian should always, you know, it's like your mind just goes and goes and. Like you might be looking at an article on Google or something like that, you know, or Yahoo. And, you know, you see you like, and that is the stupidest thing. You know what? Let me write about this because that's just stupid. You know what I mean? You know, things like that, you know, the news, you know, and then, you know, sometimes, you know, I just feel like people go through enough. Mm-hmm. And if you could just make, you know, one person laugh. It's nothing like being in a comedy show mm-hmm. and someone comes and tells you that they had chemo that day or they had bad news and they just wanted to come out mm-hmm. and how you make them laugh, how you make them just for that moment mm-hmm. forget their troubles. That's the ultimate. Oh, that's the ultimate high.
Wow. Yeah. So mm-hmm. you like to write too. I mean, you're a writer, obviously. What's your passion?
You know, if I could do, people say they ask you this question, which is good. You might want to take this. I'll let you have it. if you could do what you love and not even get paid for it, what would it be? Mm-hmm. For me, it's the ability to put smile on faces. Mm. My passion is to convey, to get laughter. You know what I mean? To mm-hmm. convey humor. You know, through life's challenges. Mm-hmm. If I could do that, you know, mm-hmm. you know, if I could just write, tell jokes, and eat a good batch of wings with sweet potatoes, racing day, and lemonade, strawberry, I would do that. Like if there was a job, oh, watch Price is Right. If I had a job, you know, if they told me, they say, you know, on this job description, you have to write. You have to eat sweet potatoes and chicken and watch Price is Right and do jokes and you have the job. It was like, that would be like the ultimate, you know, fantasy job, you know, just like, you know, you can watch, we need you to watch as much Price is Right, you know, as you can, you know, and we just want you to write, you know what I mean?
Chicken wings, you know, we're Chicagoans. Yes. So Harold's. Now, let's, well, you're Southsider, so it's Harold's, right?
Yeah, it's okay. Harold's. Now, I've right. never tasted Remus's. Okay. I know there's a war. I know there's a war. You know what I mean? There's a,
well, I've tasted, you know, both. I've tasted both. And I'm going to still have to go with Harold's. I mean, we Southsiders, right? You know?
Yes. No, no, Uncle Remus's, you know, see, I need somebody's son to take me out on a date to Uncle Remus's. Isn't that just terrible? You know, somebody's child, male child, had to take me out, you know, because I want Uncle Remus's. And I see it on the internet, you know, people, my friends, like, oh, you make them with pants, you know, we got Uncle Remus's. You know, and it's not like I can't even drive up, like, I can drive and get some, you know, if I want, you know, right. But, you know, yeah, so. Southside for real, you know, I love Harold's.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Harold's all day. What advice do you have for women who are close to turning 40 or who are over 40, but believe their best years are behind them?
Well, call me. No, no, but I just, you know, in all seriousness, I just think that sometimes it's time for introspection, you know, a time of inflection where you have to really ask yourself, if you knew exactly when the end would be, what would you do? Hmm. What, you know, I would ask that question, you know, and are you honestly happy outside of your relationships? you know, are you happy with who you are? Are you happy? You know, and I would say your best years are not behind you unless you want them to be.
Mm-hmm. That's good.
You know, write a list, write, you know, just put it on paper. See if you are happy. You know, do you, if, you know, I ask people all the time, you know, we try to exude being polite to people mm-hmm. and how we should speak to people, but how do you speak to you? Mm-hmm. You know, sometimes, Jackie, I have to talk to myself like somebody I care about, like it's another person. Mm-hmm. You know, hey, sometimes you have to reckon with yourself.
Yeah.
You reckon with yourself, you know, you talk to yourself like you would talk to someone you love very much. And usually you tell the person the truth.
Yes.
If you love.
I like that. Wow, that's powerful. Wow. So I know that you are definitely have much more in front of you. How can people get in touch with you?
I don't really, you know, I know I should probably utilize the other ones, but I'm a simple person, you know. Mm-hmm. I try to, you know, I'm just a person. I love my family very much. Mm-hmm. You'll see timeline with things that I come up off the top of my head, pictures of my family, you know, and different things like that. But just Facebook, Marcy Delaney, you know, that's about it. You know, I'm sure I forget my name on Instagram and stuff like that. I don't know. I got to check, tell you who I am on Instagram. You know, I might be Marcy Delaney on Instagram, you know, like that, you know, but I don't know why I'm on Facebook.
Okay. Wow. Yeah. Well, Marcy, the one and only Delaney.
Yes, ma'am. Wow. Yes.
So I'm sure that, you know, the world has much more to see when it comes to you. You are hilarious and you are just a gift. And I'm so happy that God was not done with you. So happy.
You know, me too. I got wings to eat. Men to meet.
Yes.
I do got wings.
Yeah. We got to sit down in front of some heralds very soon. Thank you so much, Marcy, for being on the show today.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm sorry I had to, you know, go there with you being a goody-goody.
It's okay.
You know, you just want to work and do your work and, you know, not get in trouble. And so. You weren't going, you know. I had a couple of people that had to go with me and get in trouble, but you weren't one of them.
It's so funny. I was just telling my daughter about the time when I was always messenger in Mr. Goodaid's class.
Oh, God. And when you were all in Mr. Goodaid's class, you know, the goody goodies, you know, and I think I don't know if we had Miss Hill together when Miss Fitzmaurice or one, it was a couple of classes we were actually in together, you know, and I just remember you being the quiet, the goody goody, you know, it's like, you know, that's Jackie Jenny. She, you know what I mean? You didn't get in trouble with us, you know, but
yeah,
I think we were in the seventh grade. Mm-hmm. And I had made a bet with Dwight Hill and Parrish Cunningham. And I just came up with this idea. I was like, you know what? We were in the gym room. And I said, you know what? Let's pretend like we're deaf. You know, it was like remember we used to give the hearing, remember? We used to take the hearing test in the gym room.
Yes.
And, you know, it was like, y'all gonna pretend like y'all deaf. And they were like, yeah, you know, we pretend like we're deaf, you know. And, you know, but remember, we were like always the shortest ones in the class.
Yes,
we were
the shortest
ones. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the shortest ones had to go first. And, you know, when we get into the chair, I'm going to, you know, sit there and they're going to beat and I'm not going to say anything, you know. And then when they turn up real loud, I'm going to pretend like I didn't hear them. So everybody was in, you know, we were all in for, you know, okay, we're going to do it. You know, I said, you do it first. Your idea. I sit down and they put the headphones on me. And so the lady's like, you know, you put the headphones on you hear the sound, you just, you know, you raise your hand. Mm-hmm. And I remember they could beep and I'm just sitting there. You know, and those fools on the other side of the gym like screaming, girl. They're like laughing so hard. And the lady like turned it up really loud. It's like, and I sit there and I take off the headphones and I go, when you guys are gonna start beeping? And you're like, you know, and so I didn't get to say I was just kidding, you know, because they had to go on with it. And I remember my mom, they sent my mom that letter. So I had to get my hearing checked. And, you know, back then, they like take off work. They did not like take off work. And Ruby Lee had to take off work, girl.
Uh-oh.
She's like, you can't hear. I was like, huh? She's like, go play with me. You know? So you can see, I'm like, yeah. She's, no. And she's like, you know what? I have to take off work. And I was like, okay, it was a joke. I was like, I can feel, you know. So, you know, he's like, if I can take off work, I go up to that, you know, to that ear, nose, and throat doctor on Western, and I find out that you can hear, you know. And I was like, okay, I confess. Yeah. But needless to say, I was the only one that did that. Everybody else passed, but me, you know, being stupid, you know. Okay. Yeah, yeah, I just remember that's one of those Vietnam moments, those flashbacks I get, you know, doing crazy stuff.
But it's been a pleasure having you on the show today, Marcy.
Once again, thank you for having me. I really enjoyed myself, and I hope to see you soon.
Marcy Deloney is more than a survivor. Her spirit of determination is unmatched, and she is ready once again to work her magic on stage and do what she does best. If you're interested in booking Marcy for any events, you may reach out to her on Facebook at Marcy Deloney.